ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. The Australian Agronomy Conference is underway in Darwin, and the organisers have started the event by presenting a very special award to one of the legends of NT agriculture.
Oh, obviously, I'm an older bloke now, and it's good to know that somebody thinks you're important. So I'm very grateful for the award. I think the big thing is, here's a national organisation recognising the work of people in the north.
Also today, a look at how much money Coles made in the last financial year. And this afternoon, you'll hear from NT cattle producers who have been heading into town this week to have their say on the future of the industry's $5 per head cattle transaction levy. A very busy country hour this afternoon. Hope you can stick around. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC, and g'day there if you've tuned in via the podcast. We start today's program with one hell of a story about a miraculous search and rescue that happened last night on an NT cattle station. With severe storms sweeping through central Australia last night, a worker at Pine Hill Station got lost as the weather got worse. Now, thankfully, a very clever horse called Denny has saved the day. Here is the owner of Pine Hill Station, Greg Vickers, to tell you what happened last night.
One of our employees is a very keen horse rider. She often heads off just sort of late afternoon for a ride after work or whatever. And yesterday afternoon, she did the same thing. Quite a large storm came in probably an hour after she left the station. She didn't actually tell anybody where she was going either, but a fairly major storm hit this area here, and which a horse wasn't very keen about, and was keen not to head into the storm and sort of walking away from the station going with the storm. So she had a little bit of trouble trying to turn the horse around, but as soon as the storm had sort of passed, it became dark very quickly, dark clouds everywhere, and it went from light to dark quite quickly. And she couldn't see anything and got quite disorientated, couldn't find her way back to the station. So
how did the staff member there make it back?
We were obviously out looking for her, but we did turn all of the station lights on. We thought she probably wasn't that far away, but look, she gave up as far as trying to find her own way, and she really let the horse have its head, and the horse sort of started heading back in the right direction, amazingly, and then she saw the light on the hill, which helped.
That's pretty remarkable, just letting the station horse. Tell us a little bit about the horse hero that's gotten the station worker back home safely.
Yeah, well, it's, Ayla has a number of horses, and they're very good horses, and she obviously spends a lot of time on them, and I don't really understand how it happened, but the horse seemed to know which way to go back home, and obviously his mates are all back here, so he started heading in that direction. She just gave him a loose rein, and he started walking in the right direction, which was amazing.
I've been told a little bit about this horse, Danny. Danny, it's just Danny the champion right now. Just a regular old stock horse as well, from what I've been told as well. Just a remarkable connection, I guess, to where home is for that animal.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think they know where home is, and they know where their mates are, and they sort of want to come back to their mates, really. So, yeah, look, not a great situation to be in. She didn't get back to the homestead till about 1 o'clock this morning, and we spent, lots of times on buggies and motorbikes trying to find her. But, look, the station staff did their best, the police did their best, and but the outcome was excellent.
And this staff member is okay now?
Yeah, no, she's fine. She only had a T-shirt on, but a bit cold when she returned back, but no, she is fine, having a day off.
I think very, very deserved that day off. Quite a decent rescue effort, or searching effort, I guess, from both station hands. There was also police there as well.
Police was here from Tea Tree. Yeah, they were excellent. We had helicopters organised for the morning first light. I mean, you can't do too much when it's really pitch black dark, but anyway, it all worked out okay. We very, very lucky, really. It didn't look very good there for some time, but anyway, it's worked out very well, and we're very happy this morning at Pine Hill.
I could imagine. What is the feeling around there, around the camp right now?
Oh, look, we're related, really. It's might not have ended up like that at all, but we thought, seeing the horse hadn't come back, or the dog hadn't come back to the station without her, I thought, well, that there's a chance that they may all still be together, which they were, yeah.
And dog and horse, okay? Are they both being treated pretty well for getting your subman back home?
Yeah, they probably don't know what all the fuss was about, but no, they're fine.
Is this something that is a bit of a unique scenario, or is this maybe, I guess, a bit of a warning or a reminder of some of the dangers that do exist with working on remote cattle stations?
Well, it's definitely a warning. There's no doubt about that. Nobody would be leaving here without letting someone know about where you are. Communications, we probably, you know, we've just a bit lax on that, but she won't be leaving without a radio or a phone from now on. So, no, look, it's a warning for us. It's a learning thing for us. And, you know, it can happen so easily. You just don't think it will happen, but it can, and it can happen so easily. So, you know, when it's pitch black and you get disorientated, it's not a very nice feeling. It's very unpleasant. We'll just be a lot more careful in the future.
That's Greg Vickers, a very relieved Greg Vickers, I'd reckon. He's at Pine Hill Station sharing this story to Charles Geary. So Pine Hill's about 180 kilometres drive northwest of Alice Springs. A real scary moment last night for the team and for this young worker, but to quote Greg, an excellent outcome. And what about Danny the Stockhorse? Saving the day out there at Pine Hill.
Do you want to hear a story?
For 30 years, Australian Story has been inspiring, revealing, compelling.
Don't just lean in, leap in.
Join Lee Sales to celebrate extraordinary moments.
Let's look back at the breadth and diversity of Australian Story.
With Claudia Carvin, Michael Klim, Alex Lloyd, Tim Minchin and more familiar faces.
This is nourishment for my soul.
Australian Story celebrates 30 years. Monday, August 31 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
It is 22 to 1 and you are tuned into the Country Hour. In Darwin right now, there's about 250 agronomists hanging out for the 2026 Agronomy Australia Conference. It's the first time Darwin has hosted this event. It's amazing how many people are involved. And the event kicked off with a very special moment with an award presented to one of the legends of NT agriculture. He'll be on your radio next after this tune by the Pigman Brothers. Towards the blazing sun. That is Road Train by the Pigman Brothers. A reminder, if you need a duck out to the paddock for whatever reason, you can always download our podcast and listen at a time that suits you. Just search for NT Country Hour wherever you get your favourite podcast from.
Well, I'm Roger Steele, and I've been droving a heck of a lot, more times than I really wanted to. I've been with rushing cattle, I've been through the Murrinjay on 4 occasions. I enjoyed it so much, I got into Parliament later to get away from the cattle. I was the Minister for Primary Industry on the very first occasion, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
It is 18 to 1. Now, the Australian Society of Agronomy is holding its national conference in Darwin this week. And at last night's official opening, one of the legends of NT agriculture, Ian Baker, received the Society's Neil Fettle Award. So this award recognises an individual who has made a lifelong commitment to the agricultural industry, and that is Ian Baker for sure. He has spent over three decades actively building and supporting the Territory's farming sector, and he's a big believer in the motto, start small, grow big. I caught up with Ian and asked what this award means to him.
Oh, obviously, I'm an older bloke now, and it's good to know that somebody thinks you're important. And Neil Fettle was a well-known wheat breeder in New South Wales. And he was quite a well-respected man in Australian agriculture, and his family created this award. So that's important to acknowledge Neil. For me, I think the thing is, I'm just one person. As I said at the awards last night, industries are built by communities, not by individuals. I think back, and many individuals, some who are no longer here, Roger Rooney, others who are still here, like Lawrence Artoy, Peter Kavanagh, there's a whole group of us who created industries. And so I'm very grateful for the award. I think the big thing is, here's a national organisation recognising the work of people in the north, an area that hasn't always been very successful. And to me, that's the most significant point.
You mentioned in your speech last night that northern agriculture is currently going through an evolution, not a revolution. Can you explain that to us?
So the development of farming takes time. We have to give ourselves time to learn, especially in a new environment where there's no knowledge. And even if you're an expert farmer that comes from Queensland or somewhere and comes here, you have to relearn. Not everyone can relearn. So it's not fast. It's not quick. Southern agriculture developed in an evolutionary way, an organic way. It just developed slowly and people had time to learn. Not everyone succeeded, but things grew. The North has been plagued by people who want to be revolutionaries, who want to come in and change the world overnight. And that's very difficult in a new environment where you don't know anything, where knowledge is poor. And unfortunately, many of them are financed. And they make a mistake, and the financiers don't really like the fact that they made a mistake. And so they fall over. They fall over because they never gave themselves time to learn. They never gave themselves time to evolve. And many of them I've seen many of them, and they still exist, are driven by their dream, but their dream kills them. And the farmers that I know who were involved in the evolution of horticulture and more recently the development of broadacre cropping gave themselves time to learn.
And I think we've spoken about it before. Sadly, some of the big failures in the north are the ones that have grabbed the big headlines that everyone remembers.
Absolutely. Not many people know the story of Vietnamese refugees in Darwin who created a big vegetable industry, largely on their own. Very few people are aware that the award is now a success, largely because a group of German migrants came in the late 70s and early 80s. And those Germans are still there. Their children are still there farming. And these people treated it as an evolving thing. But their story's never told. The only stories you hear about is the failures of Sea Dragon, Sandalwood, Humpty Doo Rice, on and on and on. But the lessons from the people who have made a success here, be it mango growers or melon growers or vegetable growers or in the Ord, is you need time to learn.
Start small, grow big.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Matt, you got it. Now, don't start big and end up with little.
You've been involved in Northern Ag now for decades. What's exciting you most right now about Northern agriculture?
Broadacre cropping. We're coming up with the next Food Futures Conference and I'd sort of retired 6 years ago. And I'm interesting, I was asked to come back to try and help narrow the focus on development of broadacre cropping in the north. So about probably 15 years ago, a small group of us said, look, horticulture's done well. Not many people knew it had done well, but horticulture had already done well in 2010. And we said, what's the next growth sector in our part of the world? And we said, it's really around broadacre cropping. At the time, there was very little. And so we had a deliberate strategy to how do we develop this broadacre cropping sector? And as a distinct, when I came here, involved with mangoes. I was put into a job and I was young and I didn't know much and things happened and I can't really claim a lot of credit. I was clearly at the centre of it, like part of it all, but so the broadacre cropping thing interests me a lot. And there, since we started the Food Futures thing, we've got significant cotton in three states, North Queensland, in the Gulf, in the Territory and in WA. And the other thing I think that's really very valuable is the growth of feed for cattle. And that has the opportunity to revolutionise cattle with a lot better nutrition. So traditionally, it's been a pretty extensive cattle industry. But once we start growing some good quality hay and mix it in with some cottonseed, we change the cattle industry in the north pretty fundamentally, especially in terms of survival of the mothers and in terms of calving rates. So our calving rates have always been low, but once you improve nutrition, those things change a lot. And that's a big thing. That's a local sector thing. That's it's not exporting to Japan or somewhere. It's something I think, those two things I think have got a lot of future.
Hey, Ian, congratulations on the Neil Federal Award. Thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
Good on you, Matt. Always good to talk to you, mate.
Big thanks to Ian Baker, veteran of the NT's agricultural sector, who last night at Parliament House in Darwin was presented with the Neil Fettel Award. This is all part of the Agronomy Australia conference that is underway in Darwin. About 250 agronomists in town. They've stepped out of the paddocks, put on their good gear and come to Darwin. And they've come from all over. I met some agronomists from New Zealand at last night's function. So they really have come from far and wide. And you'll hear more stories from this event over the next few days here on the Country Hour.
It's a Sunday tradition.
G'day, this is Macca.
Welcome to the program wherever you are. Lovely to have your company and what a lovely place to be at this time of the morning.
Australia all over with Macca.
Nice to talk to you, Daryl.
Thank you, Macca. It's good to speak. But as I say, we listen to you every Sunday morning, so I thought I'd give you a buzz.
The best way to do Sunday.
Listen to every one of your shows for over 30 years. I love your show.
Good on you. Thanks, Michael.
Australia all over with Macca from 5:30 on ABC Local Radio.
It's 10 to 1. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Supermarket giant Coles has today released its yearly financial results. Ooh, and there's some big numbers in it. I'm joined in the studio by Tom Robinson. Looks like it's been a pretty good year for Coles.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. A better year than expected in the lead-up to the announcing of these results. So Coles has reported an underlying profit of $1.26 billion, which is up 13% on last year. It's obviously a pretty big number, which will pay dividends for shareholders. They're expecting to pay a dividend of 78 cents per share, which again is a 13% improvement on last year. Sales revenue is also up by 5.1%. That excludes tobacco, interestingly. So Coles Group has excluded tobacco in the reporting of this information, and it's still sort of being coming out from the ABC business team right now. Coles is one of the biggest tobacco sellers in the country. This is obviously a controversial sector that's been hit by a number of challenges lately, such as rising excise prices, growth in the illegal tobacco sector, and vaping. So that has changed the market. The ABC business team says it's still digging into why that sales revenue has been reported like this. So the revenue is up by 5%, but that doesn't include revenue
the tobacco.
From tobacco. Okay. So wait and see on that one.
Rightio.
Supermarket giant's earnings were also affected by $235 million provision. It had to set that money aside to cover remediation costs related to a major staff underpayment scandal. So the federal court found that Coles and Woolworths had failed to keep accurate employment records. Both of those companies expect to repay hundreds of millions to staff.
Right, so $235 million in underpayments.
Yes.
Holy smokes, righto. But I guess the headline figure, Coles, underlying profit, up 13% to $1.26 billion with a B.
Not bad.
Not bad. Thanks for keeping us up to date, Tom. And people can read more about this on the business page of the ABC. Media outlets in the United States are reporting that live cattle exports from Mexico have resumed. So this trade has been banned for more than a year now, but apparently some cattle are now starting to cross that border. I've actually seen, not today, but over the years, I've seen videos of holes in Donald Trump's infamous wall, and they walk the cattle literally through the wall from Mexico into the US. So anyway, this trade's been banned for more than a year because of concerns the US had about the pest New World screwworm. And just in the last week, this pest's been found in a Mexican state that actually borders with the US. So there's been some concerns over the last days on whether the trade would resume. But no, US media is reporting that it is back, albeit in a very staged approach. I spoke just the other day with Ripley Atkinson from StoneX. He's been in the United States this month. He says there's still a lot of unknowns about this trade resumption and how it might all work.
The understanding and the information I received from my time over there, it's going to be a very staged and staggered approach. So there's a port opening in Arizona as of next Monday, the 24th of August. We'll be the first one to reopen to begin to see numbers start flowing back into that market. There's a little bit of sort of tentative unsurety, really, about how that's going to look. And a lot of that has to do with really just the unknown. You know, does it remain open consistently and you continue to start to see volumes rebuild in terms of imports out of Mexico? The other question that the market has at the minute, over the last 18 months to 2 years, is that Mexico itself and its beef industry has invested and expanded its own domestic capacity and capability. That's feedlot space and obviously processing space as well. So there's a little question hanging over that relationship with the US at the minute is, do the numbers, you know, really get back to what they were prior to the border closing, or do those cattle which were traditionally sold as feeders actually remain in the Mexican domestic system and be fed and processed in the Mexican market and potentially end up in the US in a box rather than as feeder cattle? So there's a few unanswered questions there that the market wants to see play out.
The ban came in because of concerns around New World screwworm. What's happening in that space at the moment? Because it got into America.
It has, yeah, and it is in America at the minute. The conversations I had, it was acknowledged that biological and biosecurity threat, but it wasn't something that consistently came up in conversation, the screwworm itself. The more discussion I had with the market and people over there close to it was really about that supply, that critical supply coming out of Mexico rather than the screwworm itself. But I think, I suppose to surmise, they're going to have to deal with it and hopefully address to eradicate it where possible in those southern states, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, so it doesn't get any further into the sort of core breeding regions and cattle regions of the US.
That's Ripley Atkinson from StoneX talking about this trade resuming between Mexico and the US. The US is super hungry for beef. We were talking about this yesterday, about how domestic beef prices in the US are just rising and rising. Donald Trump's trying to ramp up the imports. They're allowing the Mexican cattle back in, all in the hope of reducing domestic beef prices. Will it work? We'll just have to wait and see. Now, just before we get to the 1 o'clock news here on the ABC, let's talk about bushfires, because there has been some nasty fires in Darwin's rural area this month, and now sadly a home has been lost because of a fire that happened north of Kentish Road in Livingston. Nathaniel Steniford from Bushfires NT, he was on ABC Radio earlier on to explain what happened.
Unfortunately, there was one structure lost, and more unfortunately is that that was a primary dwelling for people on Kentish Road.
Okay, so that's a house that's burnt down?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And what do we know about the people that were in the house? Were they able to get out? They're obviously okay. They're able to get out in time?
The residents of the house were able to get out. One of them did suffer some burns and was conveyed to the hospital via ambulance on Sunday evening, but I believe is now out of hospital.
Do we know why that particular house caught on fire?
I wouldn't like to speculate too much. We do know that the properties that were impacted, so there were several properties north of Kentish Road there, where the fire did break containment lines when we had that wind change earlier than expected, that those properties did contain gamber on them. So that did help the fire to spread rapidly. I can't comment on the individual status of each property, though.
Okay, but it's safe to say that the amount of gamber out there was involved in increasing the quickness
certainly
of that blaze spreading.
Certainly a contributing factor in the spread, yes.
That's Nathaniel Staniford from Bushfires NT speaking earlier to Lara Stimson. It's time now to head to the newsroom, folks. See you back here in 5 minutes for a chat with the Weather Bureau.
Hey, all you listeners. This is Barb from Darwin. I'm an underground truck driver at Tanami Gold Mine working with Newmont. You're listening to Country Hour. Be proud and be loud.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. The future of the cattle industry's $5 per head cattle transaction levy is up for review. The organisation Cattle Australia has been touring the nation for weeks now, chatting to cattle producers, hearing from the beef industry about what it thinks should happen next. And the tour is wrapping up this week in the Northern Territory. And I can tell you, NT cattle producers have been heading into town. They have been flying, driving on in to have their say. What does the NT cattle industry think of this levy and what should happen next? You'll find out in a moment. And if you missed the start of today's program, then you missed an incredible story about a search and rescue that unfolded last night on Pine Hill Station in Central Australia. A young worker got lost in a storm, and thankfully, Denny the horse was able to bring her home. I'll share with you a bit of what Greg Vickers from Pine Hill told us earlier.
Quite a large storm came in probably an hour after she left the station. She didn't actually tell anybody where she was going either, but a fairly major storm hit this area here, and which her horse wasn't very keen about, and was keen not to head into the storm and sort of walking away from the station going with the storm. So she had a little bit of trouble trying to turn the horse around. But as soon as the storm had sort of passed, it became dark very quickly, you know, dark clouds everywhere, and it went from light to dark quite quickly. And she couldn't see anything and got quite disorientated, so yeah. Couldn't find her way back to the station. So
how did the staff member there make it back?
We were obviously out looking for her, but we did turn all of the station lights on. We thought she probably wasn't that far away, but look, she gave up as far as trying to find her own way, and she really let the horse have its head, and the horse sort of started heading back in the right direction, amazingly, and then she saw the light on the hill, which helped.
Denny the horse brought her home. A fantastic outcome there at Pine Hill on what would have been a scary night. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Hannah Whiteside's there this afternoon. How are you, Hannah?
I'm well, thank you.
The Bureau did tell us yesterday that Central Australia could expect some isolated storms and potentially a bit of hail. So, yeah, you've just heard there what happened at Pine Hill. Is there more of that type of weather to come?
No, that system has moved on now. Mm-hmm. But we did, we've heard reports of some hail sort of towards the west of Alice Springs, and there were definitely some gusty conditions as well, gusting up to around 65 kilometres an hour, about Territory Grape yesterday evening, and as well as that we did see that rainfall and showers as well. So some of those rainfall totals have crept up again over the last up until 9 a.m. this morning, started to ease off since this morning, and tracking eastwards out of the Barkly now, that system.
Yeah. So some of the rainfall totals up to 9 o'clock this morning. Tennant Creek Airport, 5. Bond Springs Turnoff, 20 millimetres in the gauge. Arden Soak, 16. Bond Springs Cattle Station itself's recorded 9. Territory Grape Farm, 18 millimetres. Collier Creek's had 8. But the moisture's now gone for now, hey?
For now, yes. So we've got a high that's moving across the south of Australia at the moment, and starting to push those southeasterlies through the territory with the ridge building over the coming days. So we'll see that humidity flush out of the southern parts, windy conditions through central parts, particularly in the mornings again, that Barkly breeze. And then further north, we'll see a little bit of a drop in the humidity from around tomorrow afternoon, sort of towards the base of the top end.
What's the fire danger like in the top end at the moment?
So today, across the territory, we've got nil or moderate fire danger ratings, but as that southeasterly surge starts to make its way north, we will see that pick up around the Darwin and Adelaide River area over the next few days. Tomorrow will be the peak of those fire danger ratings for the week. It'll be a high rating in Darwin and Adelaide River with those winds picking up and a little bit of dry air creeping in, high temperatures. And those ratings will remain high until the weekend around Darwin and Adelaide River.
Okay, and so what could this mean for the coastal waters for our fishers?
The winds will pick up slightly. They're not too hectic about the coastal waters. So the Roper Group will be the main one tomorrow, with easterly winds around 10 to 15 knots. And then it'll ease back a little bit for Thursday. If we're looking at Darwin Harbour itself, it's not really picking up too much around those western parts, so it'll be variable below 10 knots for the winds tomorrow, and season swell, both below a metre.
Anything else that you think we should be aware of this afternoon?
Not so much, no. I think that's kind of it for today.
No worries. Have a lovely afternoon. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Matt.
It's 11 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. The NT government has today put out a press release that has the headline, CLP calling for stronger national action on buffelgrass. So an economic impact assessment has today been released, which the government says will further inform buffelgrass management in the Northern Territory. And the Lands Minister, Joshua Burgoyne, says this economic impact assessment plan highlights the need for further investment, which is why I have written to the federal government seeking additional investment from the Commonwealth to support buffelgrass management across the Northern Territory. So this report can now be seen on the Department of Lands website. And here on the Country Hour, we're looking forward to speaking to that report's author and perhaps the minister in the coming days.
Hello, Derek Brontatamary here, TV Rangers, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Cattle Australia has been travelling around the nation for weeks and weeks now, meeting with beef producers as part of its review into the National Cattle Transaction Levy. So the tour is wrapping up this week in the Northern Territory, with plenty of NT cattle producers heading along to the sessions and sharing their views on the levy that they pay. They pay $5 per animal sold. Lindy Severin from Curtin Springs Station out near Uluru explains why she was keen to travel into town and get involved.
I'm actually really pleased that I'm here today. There's lots of layers in this issue, and some of them that I didn't have as much knowledge about as I should have. So having it explained, broken up the discussion about why things are where they are, how they got to where they are, what are the options going forward, and what are all the different parts that the levy is used for, just reminding us all about that. It's not just about marketing, that there is research and development, that there is biosecurity, that there is the residual work that is undertaken. So just a reminder of all of those pieces and then what the options could be going forward.
There was a lot covered there in terms of the review principles. Like you said, how the levy is divvied up between marketing and biosecurity, the levy period. Out of those major things that are looking at being reviewed as part of this and those principles, what was probably the big one that stood out for you?
I think there are a couple. I suppose the amount of leverage that we get from the research and development. So we actually get some additional funding on top of what the levy provides. So the bang for the buck is really quite astonishing there, and shouldn't be sidelined in any way. I suppose being able to potentially put forward an increase in biosecurity, and particularly the preparation and preparedness rather than response.
Biosecurity was a really big thing people really responded to in that meeting today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's critical. And it's one of those things that we never know what's going to hit. And the response when it does hit can be devastating, can absolutely destroy industries. So anything that we can do beforehand to identify risks, mitigate risks, cannot be understated and probably needs a much higher level of concentration than what it's had in the past.
It's been 20 years now since the last review, the last major change to this levy. 20 years is quite a long time. Do you think things like this should be done a bit more regularly?
The industry's changed a lot in 20 years, and things that impact the industry have changed. When you think about 20 years ago and the compliance and the regulation and all the other things that we now need to comply with, 20 years is a long time. You also need to probably balance that with burnout. Why are we back doing this again? You know, is it really that amount of time? So 20 years is too long. 10 years is probably too long. I think, 3 years is probably too short. There needs to be that balance in the middle where we feel that we might be able to make a significant change or contribution and not just do it for doing its sake.
The next big question I think everyone's going to have is, the levy going to go up? It's $5 right now for every transaction. Would you support an increase to the levy?
I think going through the review process and the conversation at the end about, well, it actually needs to be determined by what people are saying that they want. Personally, we certainly wouldn't begrudge a small increase if we're very clear about where that's going.
You'd want the areas and where that money is being allocated to be very clear before that increase?
Well, I think the results of the review being finalised first and what producers are saying they think is important, and then crunching the numbers. What do we need to actually achieve that? And if that includes a small increase to be able to do it, then I think that's appropriate.
Centralian pastoralists are obviously pretty unique compared to maybe small-scale producers down in the southern states, and obviously very different in some ways to the live export trade that happens in the top end. How do you think the levy uniquely impacts producers down here like yourself?
I think there's a lot in that research and development, and certainly the biosecurity. All of those things are just as important. It doesn't really matter where you live. The marketing is just as important, whether it's overseas or domestic. So I think they're probably more similar than what they are dissimilar.
That's Lindy Severin from Curtin Springs Station out near Uluru, speaking to Charles Geary. The cattle transaction levy, it is under review. Further consultations are taking place this afternoon at Tennant Creek. So that's happening at the Barclay Business Hub this afternoon at 1:30. Then on Thursday at the John England Building in Darwin,
There'll be another chance to catch up with Cattle Australia and have your say. And then it all wraps up on Friday at the Catherine Research Station at 1:30 in the afternoon. If you've got any more questions, get in touch with Cattle Australia.
G'day everyone, my name's Alex Nelson. I'm resident caretaker of the Pitchy Richie Sanctuary just out of Alice Springs. Magnificent day, beautiful spot, and you're listening to the NT Country Hour.
Our text number is 0487 99 1057. Got a message here from David who says, "G'day Country Hour, my grandfather used to deliver chopped firewood in Melbourne with a horse and cart, and quite often he would fall asleep on his horse, and at the end of his deliveries, the horse would just bring him home all of the time," says David. Can't beat a good horse. Just quickly have a listen to this. That is the sound of Toby Daly going 8 seconds on the Bull LaGrange to take out the open bull ride at Noonamar on the weekend. So Toby's had a big 2026, right? He won the open bull ride at Noonamar in May. He's won it again on the weekend with a score of 79. So well done to Toby Daly, who is just having a big year on the rodeo circuit. It's 20 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. I've got a tune here from Coulter Wall to share with you. And then later on we'll be heading to the Roma sale yards to get the latest cattle prices and also find out how things are faring when it comes to selling Northern Territory cattle at the moment.
As in my sense catches up with me.
That is Coulter Wall. You are tuned into the Country Hour. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. Now, just before we head over to the Roma sale yards, let's hear from Steve Gaff from Red Centre Rural. He says demand is strong and prices for territory cattle, especially feeder type cattle, are on the up.
The cattle market at the moment very buoyant, as you can imagine. The store job has taken another bound. Like the feeder job has got some very good interest again around cattle now that they're over the 100-day period leading up to Christmas. I had an instance the other day, quoted on some steers, and got a 25-cent upswing on them, obviously, is virtually in 48 hours. So that's what the job sort of looks like it's doing.
So very strong signs right now for that feeder part of the market.
Yeah, and then you just got to pick where you're going and who you're talking to. But yeah, that job's pretty good.
Any other parts of the market as well you're looking at right now? Any of the processor cows or the cows market as well?
Mate, the cow job's been very good for a while. It's had a little up and down swing in the sale yards, but on a kill basis, grid basis, it's been very solid and remains to be so.
Let's have a bit of a chat about the weather, because I know people down here in Central Australia this weekend have been treated to quite a decent downpour across much of the southern half of the NT. What impact is that having on you?
Mate, we've had to delay a few kill dates, put some truckings back and extend a few things with the weather and the way the weather's going, you know.
Does that mean there's going to be a bit of a delay, you think, over the next month or so while we wait for it to dry up again in terms of moving cattle?
Well, it's going to be very hard for them to trap in the current environment. A lot of things are going to have to be put back 2 or 3 weeks just to let a few cattle come back underwater. Mate, look, if this rain dries up and blows away in the next 24, 48 hours, it'll depend on what everybody got. And I mean, being still a bit cool, the water will hang about a bit longer. So, you know, it could put things back 3 to 4 weeks in places.
In terms of where you might see the market going over the next couple of weeks, where do you see it doing?
Look, I think it's a supply and demand thing, mate. And I mean, with this band of weather going through Western New South Wales and Southern Queensland, it'll certainly have an effect on where the supply of cattle are coming from. So that'll hopefully give everything a bit of a boost and kick that job along a little bit more, you know.
That is Steve Gaff from Red Centre Rural. He's a livestock agent based in Alice Springs, speaking there to Charles Geary. It's time now in the Country Hour to head to the sale yards. Of all the latest prices out of Roma this afternoon, here is David Friend.
With the anticipation of some predicted showers, Roma agents yarded 5,684 head. A quality yarding with lightweight background, heavy feeders and well-finished oats bullocks pen. All the regular buyers were on the rail and active with the market dearer by 10 to 30 cents across the board. At the time of this report, yearling steers 200 to 280 kilos, top 5, 72 cents a kilo to backgrounders. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos, selling from 426 to 582 cents also to backgrounders. Yearling steers 330 to 400 kilos, made to 496 to lot feeders and 564 cents a kilo to backgrounders. Backgrounders. Yearling steers 400 to 480 kilos, sold to 544 to backgrounders to average 535 cents a kilo. Yearling steers over 480 kilos went against the trend and sold to 460 cents to processors, 20 cents a kilo easier. Growing steers 400 to 500 kilos, made to 496 to lot feeders. Growing steers 500 to 600 kilos, sold from 410 to 454 to backgrounders. Bullocks over 600 kilos, dearer by almost 20 cents a kilo to make to 471 to processors. And bulls over 600 kilos, sold to 440 to processors.
Thank you for that, David. Yes, the feeder job is on the up. I'm just looking at Meat and Livestock Australia's national feeder steer indicator. It's back over the $5 mark. So it's sitting at $5.12 a kilo this afternoon, which is up 17 cents on last week. It's up 42 cents a kilo on this time last year. In the live export trade, just a couple of ships due out of Darwin Port over the next 7 days. There was two cattle ships out of Broome on the weekend that got held up because of a strike action at the port. I'm not too sure of the details on what the strike was all about, but cattle ships getting held up is never a good thing. So that's thankfully all been rectified, and those ships are now sailing to Indonesia. But a little hiccup I've heard over there in the west. Now, if you're interested in having your say on the cattle levy, just remember, you can head along to the John England building at Berrima Farm this Thursday at 1:30, or head along to the Catherine Research Station on Friday again at 1:30 and catch up with Cattle Australia. Have your say on the future of this $5 per head cattle transaction levy. Now, that's it for today's Country Hour. If you missed any of it, including that incredible story out of Pine Hill Station, it's all up on our podcast later on this afternoon. Enjoy the rest of your day and keep it rural. The ocean is a desert with its life underground and the perfect disguise above. Under the cities lies a heart made of ground, but the humans will give no love. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the road.